With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Rice Commission CEO champions partnership to protect habitat. The CEO of the California Rice Commission says the sector is working to secure a farming future with less vulnerability to climate extremes. Addressing the California Association of Pest Control Advisors in Reno, Tim Johnson said rice producers are, quote, starting to wrap our arms around the impacts of climate variability. He said a key to sustaining California rice production may come from sustaining critical habitat. During the drought, $10 million in grants were made available to rice farmers who provided some water to idled fields used by waterfowl on the Pacific Flyway. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. A new I-9 form reminder. Earlier this year, the Department of Homeland Security published a new Form I-9. This form, called the Employment Eligibility Verification, will be required for employers starting November 1st. Some of the changes to this form include requiring the employee to attest whether or not they are a U.S. citizen, a non-citizen national, lawful permanent resident, or a non-citizen authorized to work here in the United States. Also, having the employee present original documentation with evidence of the employee's identity and employment authorization, which the employer must take under review. There are also changes to record keeping of the form, which include keeping the I-9 form for the duration of the individual's employment and for 3 years after the date of hire or for 1 year after the date of employment ended. The I-9 form must also be made available upon request to officers of the Department of Homeland Security, the Immigrants and Employers' Rights Section, and the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, as well as the Department of Labor. If employers fail to keep proper record of this form for their employees, or if they use the wrong form, they may acquire penalties. Again, that form is required as of November 1st. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more Ag News.
Cattle producers are still reportedly sending more heifers to feedlots instead of holding them for breeding. USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagham highlights one of the surprises in the latest Cattle on Feed report.
It gives us a snapshot on October 1st of the breakouts of cattle on feed by sex. And heifer and heifer calves were about 1% above a year ago. And if we look at them as a proportion of the total number of animals on feed on October 1st, they were 40% compared to about 39.8% a year ago. We are probably, again, digging fairly deep into that pool of animals outside feedlots. And the fact that we are still looking at very high proportion of heifers on feed would indicate that, you know, quite a bit of those animals are female stock that went into the feedlots.
The Inflation Reduction Act has provided significant funding support for a variety of USDA programs. USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby recently highlighted the benefits that IRA funding is providing.
The Inflation Reduction Act investment in America by allocating $19.5 billion to our agency to support conservation practices that have climate change mitigation benefits. This funding goes to our existing oversubscribed farm bill programs. One thing I can see about fiscal year 23 is that demand for all of our programs remained high. And that is a good thing for us because we're looking at even higher levels of funding and even more opportunities to help people help the land in fiscal year 24. In addition to the $2.4 billion available through the Farm Bill, NRCS is making $3 billion available through President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. The breakdown of this funding by program is Environmental Quality Incentive Program, an additional $1.6 billion, Conservation Stewardship Program, an additional $472 million, our Agriculture Conservation Easement Program, an additional $189 million, and our Regional Conservation Partnership Program, an additional $754 million.
And as a reminder, the next application deadline for the Environmental Quality Incentives Program is Friday, November 3rd. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
GMOs, genetically engineered, bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, we are fully into fall and winter weather is approaching. Experts say we're heading into an El Nino for the first time in 5 years. Typically during an El Nino, we see a weakening of the northern jet stream, the polar jet stream, and a strengthening of the southern or subtropical jet stream. Temperatures should be mild and warm for most of the country, particularly along the northern tier. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey has some predictions for temperature ranges for the country this winter as a result of the El Nino.
For temperatures, a lot of the country tends to be quite mild, quite warm during El Nino winters. That is especially true across the northern half of the United States, extending all the way from parts of California and the Pacific Northwest through the northern plains, the Midwest, the Great Lakes states, and the Northeast. So we are expecting mild weather. That doesn't mean every single day during the winter is going to be warm, but if you average the 90 plus days of winter, we do expect to see above normal temperatures, particularly in the northern U.S. Now, further to the south, as you get into the area that's affected by the subtropical jet stream, we tend to see more rainfall and cloudiness. So temperatures may cue a little bit closer to what we would expect to be normal for this time of year, but that really just means it'll be cloudy and rainy and not particularly cold.
Meanwhile, precipitation should be more predominant in the southern half of the U.S. Here are Rippey's expectations.
The precipitation outlook for December of 2023 through February of 2024, with that weakened northern or polar jet stream, oftentimes we see drier than normal conditions extending across parts of the northern United States. Typically, that is most likely to happen across the northern Rockies and northern plains, as well as the Great Lakes region. That can translate into less than normal snowfall in many cases. And then with the hyperactive southern or subtropical jet stream enhanced by El Nino, oftentimes we see a very active storm track across the south. This year, this winter, we're expecting that above normal precipitation pattern to extend from California eastward through the Four Corners region, the central and southern Great Plains, and then through the Gulf Coast states, and even extending along the Atlantic coast as far north as southern New England.
In other news, the Senate is ready to get to work on things such as the Farm Bill, that according to Senator Tammy Baldwin. While government funding and the uncertainty of the speakership in the House has delayed the Farm Bill beyond its expiration date, the Wisconsin Democrat says lawmakers are eager to start negotiations.
I don't sit on the Senate Ag Committee, but I do follow their work closely. Obviously, Wisconsin has a very robust agricultural sector. And while we didn't meet the deadline of September 30th to pass the final farm bill, I'm working these months to ensure that Wisconsin farmers really have a seat at the table as the negotiations continue.
Baldwin has specific provisions she is supporting to be included in the farm bill.
Particularly the Farm and Ranch Assistance Network, which connects farmers with the mental health resources they need. Expanding access to affordable child care is a big rural Wisconsin issue right now. It's frankly, it's an emergency all over the nation, but we're certainly seeing our share of challenge there. Increasing broadband connectivity for our farmers and supporting, of course, the dairy business innovation initiative.
While the Senate may be ready, the chamber usually waits until the House writes and passes the bill first. A recent report from Rabobank says the outlook of the global fertilizer markets is positive in the coming years. However, there are some challenges and potential risks to monitor. The global fertilizer market is recovering with an estimated increase in usage around 3% this year after a 7% drop in 2022 because of significant market complications. The Rabobank Affordability Index shows a positive outlook for fertilizer purchasing in 2024 with an expected increase of almost 5% next year. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, it was announced this past week that cases of lumpy skin disease have been found in South Korea. Will Jordan has more information.
A lumpy skin disease outbreak is spreading across South Korea. 29 cases of the highly infectious viral disease have been reported as of Wednesday, October 25th. Though lumpy skin disease was introduced to Asia in 2019, this is the first outbreak of its kind in South Korea. While the disease does not pose a risk to humans, it does cause severe skin blisters, fever, and reduced milk production in affected cattle. Officials in South Korea are alarmed, but have announced plans to vaccinate all cattle by the beginning of November. Agricultural Ministry officials are working to secure 4 million doses of lumpy skin disease vaccine after exhausting the nation's 540,000-dose vaccine stockpile in an effort to complete the countrywide vaccination program. Along with vaccination, South Korean officials have imposed temporary bans on cattle transportation and culled all cattle at infected facilities. For cattle producers in the United States, tracking this disease is important, as a domestic outbreak could prove fatal to our nation's beef and dairy industries. South Korea is also one of the largest importers of U.S. beef, beckoning to the importance of this agricultural and economic relationship. For Agnet Media, I'm Will Jordan.
Thanks, Will. You know, each month the U.S. Department of Agriculture releases their meat export forecast. And World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski discusses USDA's October outlook for the U.S. meat trade and exports.
In terms of meat trade, relatively small changes in terms of the total beef exports. We reduced just a little bit, 20 million pounds for 2023 and 55 million pounds for 2024, reflecting the high prices in the U.S., high beef prices, making us relatively less competitive. Pork exports down a bit for 2023, reflecting some current observed data on trade, but expected to be up in 2024 given the higher production and lower prices. Broiler trade up a bit in 2023, but expected to pull back by about the same amount, so up 50 million pounds in 2023, down 50 million pounds in 2024, reflecting those higher prices and relatively tighter supplies.
Again, that was World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski. And they've announced the nominations are now open for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Environmental Stewardship Award. Established back in 1991, the Environmental Stewardship Award program annually recognizes outstanding stewardship practices and conservation achievements of cattle producers across the nation. Any individual, group, or organization is eligible to nominate one individual or business raising or feeding cattle. Individuals and families may not nominate themselves, although nominees may be involved in the preparation of the application. Now, along with a typed application, one nomination letter, and three letters of recommendation highlighting the nominee's leadership in conservation are required. The deadline to turn those in is March the 8th of 2024. To learn more about it and to download the nomination packet, go to ncba.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
A nonprofit organization leader receives major recognition. That's coming up in today's This Land of Ours report. A nonprofit organization leader received recognition last week as the 2023 World Food Prize laureate. Rod Bain has more.
From the Iowa State Capitol building in Des Moines Thursday evening.
After winning her own fight against cancer, Heidi was inspired to create a nonprofit organization, Roots of Peace, to battle an insidious cancer of the earth by replacing the remnants of war with bountiful farmland.
World Food Prize Foundation President Terry Branstad and other dignitaries, among those celebrating the awarding of what is dubbed the Nobel Prize of Agriculture to the 2023 laureate, Heidi Kuhn.
I believe this is a moment in human history, for the removal of a landmine and the planting of a grapevine or tree of life is an act of peace.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. Crop insurance is a key component of an effective risk management plan for many farmers. But the federal crop insurance program is complex and technical, and the rules must be closely followed. In a recent case, a dairy operating as a partnership took out a crop insurance policy that insured brown mid-rib corn as grain. Before harvest, the dairy notified the insurer of its plan to use the crop as silage. Crop prices nosedived, and the dairy filed a claim. The insurer audited the fields and issued payment based on the audit. A disgruntled partner sued as a whistleblower under a special provision of the Federal False Claims Act, asserting that the dairy had fraudulently obtained crop insurance proceeds. The court disagreed, noting that brown mid-rib corn is not adapted for silage use only and could be insured as grain even if it is cut as silage. That meant the intended use could change, and the court pointed out the dairy notified the insurer of the change before chopping the corn. Numerous court cases in recent years involving crop insurance illustrate that care must be taken to closely follow and comply with the technical rules of the Federal Crop Insurance Program. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
USDA's October crop production report is traditionally the first U.S. orange production forecast for the new marketing year. As Lance Hoding of the National Agricultural Statistics Service explains, the first glance at the 2023-24 marketing year includes several sets of stats.
It's a combination this time of year of establishing acreage, or maybe put another way, tree counts. Then we've got some other work that we do to establish fruit set per tree, and then ultimately measuring size and drop as well. Those are all critical components to determining orange crop size in particular in Florida, as well as some of the other citrus crops.
So when it comes to the initial production forecast for both Valencia and non-Valencia orange varieties nationwide,
the Valencia portion of the crop actually up 3.94 million boxes from what was produced last year. Non-Vals up 1.73 million boxes.
Mark Hudson of USDA NAS in Florida provides the breakdown of potential orange production by state, starting with Valencia's.
Florida is 13 million boxes, California 7.5 million boxes, Texas 350,000 boxes.
While for non-Valencia oranges,
for Florida it's 7.5 million, and for California it's 37 million of non-Valencias. Texas is 450,000 boxes.
Lance Hoding says when it comes to Florida's orange crops,
they're still small. Generally speaking, we're looking at fewer trees, lower fruit set, and then we'll work through the size and drop as the season goes on.
Mark Hudson expands the Florida crop coverage through year-over-year comparisons.
Last year, we had two hurricanes, so that really knocked last year's down. So compared to last year, this first forecast for our all oranges is up 30%. For our non-Valencia oranges compared to last season is up 22%, and for our Valencias, it's up 35% from last season.
The first outlook of California's forecasted orange production includes a 1% year-over-year increase in navel orange production and a 12% rise in Valencias from the prior marketing year. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
As expected, the month of October was not kind to most agriculture, financial, and energy markets that we follow. I'm Mark Oppold with the Bottom Line Report as we close out October tomorrow, brought to you by Kloss Equipment. We track 48 different markets at the Bottom Line Report each day. During October, of the 48, 39 ending the month in the red. Only 9 are in the black, led by orange juice, natural gas, cocoa, and soybean meal. Interesting that while soy meal is at the very top of the list, soy oil is at the very bottom, the worst performing of all 48, down 10.5% for the month. Not faring a whole lot better. Feeder cattle down 9.25%. Oats down 8.25%. Now the picture brightens a little when looking at the performance of the 48 since New Year's, 21 in positive territory year to date, but corn, soybeans, soy oil, wheat, lean hogs, all still in the red after 10 months. This is the Bottom Line Report. Harvest with confidence with the Kloss Treon 740 Combine, a Class 7 machine with cutting-edge features designed to optimize performance. Take a closer look at Kloss.com. We see a higher week ahead for grain and livestock futures. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day and a profitable week ahead.
In Farm and Ranch headlines from AgNet West, the nation has a new Speaker of the House, and he's someone already trusted by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. More after this. NCBA's Vice President of Government Affairs, Ethan Lane, says Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana has not served on the Agriculture Committee, but he has a strong voting record when it comes to agriculture.
He has been a pretty reliable supporter of what agriculture has asked for. He's a guy who has voted for the Farm Bill. He's a guy who has voted for ag appropriations bills. I mean, he's been a supportive member of Congress.
Lane says the NCBA has supported Johnson since he was first voted into office in 2016. And Lane says Johnson has shown to have strong principles.
He's very resolute in his view of those principles. He is for free markets. He is for individual liberty. He is for limited government. And those tend to be values that overlap very strongly with most cattle producers around the country.
Read more on our website, agnetwest.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And in more agriculture news, the American Simmental Association is sharing the importance of feet and leg scoring, including scoring methods and developing a new EPD for feet and legs. The association led geneticist Lane Geis explained where it's all heading at this year's annual Simmental Fall Focus event. Bob Cervera has more in this report.
This year's Fall Focus, co-hosted by Colorado Simmental Association, featured guest speakers, an educational symposium, and helpful demonstrations for attendees. Speakers included American Simmental Association's lead geneticist, Lane Geis, who demonstrated to fellow producers how to analyze and accurately score feet and legs.
We talked about what members should look for if they want to try to collect feet and leg phenotypes, and different things to pick up on, how to identify different characteristics in the feet, working through the logistics of animals as they go through a pen. And a lot of that, you know, is just making sure the members feel comfortable and confident in their ability to capture scores for feet and legs.
American Simmental Association is creating an EPD for feet and legs, but it's early in development. Building an EPD like this relies on producers correctly capturing and sending in their cattle's feet and leg scores.
You know, we're asking membership to send us feet and leg scores so we can help build a genetic prediction for them, primarily to help them select for reduced risk as it, you know, relates to soundness issues. We want to make sure that the way that we capture feet and legs throughout the day stays the same and consistently within our membership.
Geis explains the most effective methods for how producers can gather their cattle and collect scores at home.
So a lot of the times what we recommend to producers is put them into an alley that is small enough at which they can move around and you have enough space that they're comfortable, but small enough that you can still pick up on differences within those animals.
The latest research on feet and legs reveals the trait has an influence on other aspects of beef production.
A lot of our initial research looked at how does feet and legs play into the ability of animals to stay in the herd longer. That's our primary interest. And the data that I've looked at, 5 to 10% of animals leave the herd due to soundness issues. Soundness does play a role in culling incidents And there is some research that suggests that it also influences performance. So bad feet and legs or bad soundness can decrease performance for growth traits, and we're actively investigating that right now.
Visit fallfocus.org to learn more about American Simmental Association's Fall Focus event. For American Simmental Association, I'm Bob Cervera.
The final 8 days of October have been associated with the annual awareness campaign known as Bat Week. And as Kim Winter of the U.S. Forest Service acknowledges,
that was entirely intentional,
with the obvious connection of bats with the spooky season.
One of those iconic symbols of Halloween is a bat. So we decided to leverage that image of bats, but to turn the narrative, to turn it into something positive.
Meaning emphasis on the role of bats in various aspects of agriculture and crop development and protection.
Around the globe, bats are really well known for being both pollinators, but also nectar feeding and seed dispersing. And so they serve a really important ecological niche in doing those ecosystem services, as we call them. But here in the United States, they really just eat a lot of pests, so flying insects and moths.
Bat Week started out in 2014 with a small coalition of partners, such as the Forest Service, yet has expanded significantly in collaboration since then.
In 2017, we got the Secretary of Agriculture to proclaim it as a national week in celebrating bats. And what we've done over the years is develop an international coalition of partners, nonprofit partners, academics, museums, and federal partners across the Americas. So including Canada, the United States, Mexico, and through our Mexican partners, we've actually reached all the way into Central and South America, as well as the Caribbean. And so at this point, we have quite a number of people in our coalition celebrating Bat Week and spreading a positive narrative for bats across the Americas.
As far as Bat Week events, Winter says celebration of the importance of bats and the international coalition behind it continues to grow.
It's really just growing sort of organically from what started throughout the Americas. And so now we're seeing bat events and festivals in as far away as Nigeria and throughout Asia, where people who generally understand the role of bats in their ecosystem, they see them a lot more visibly than we do here in the Americas, would understand bats, but maybe not want them around. And we're increasing that visibility through a series of partners that are also linked to our domestic partner here, Bat Conservation International. But through spreading the word, we're getting everyone engaged in learning more about bats, kind of understanding what they do for agriculture, what they do for rainforests.
To find out more about Bat Week 2023, including bat facts and Bat Week events in your area, go to this web address, www.batweek.org. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
We're joined today by state conservationist for USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service in California, Carlos Suarez. And we are talking about the annual Latino Farmer Conference taking place this week. And so, Carlos, let's just start out here with where it's going to be held this year.
Yes, thanks so much, Ryan, for the opportunity to speak to you about this event that we are on our ninth year. We're very excited about hosting the Latino Farmers Conference in his ninth year. And this will be taking place at the Robert Cabral Agricultural Center in Stockton, California. And that is located at 2101 East Earhart Avenue, Stockton. And it will be a full day starting on November 1st from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And we also anticipate a second day, which is a field tour that will be taking place on November 2nd. But the main seminars, webinars, and we have 14 tracks that we have set up for our farmers and ranchers, focusing on Latino farmers and ranchers and forest users, will be taking place on November 1st.
Very cool. And what sets this particular event apart from maybe some others is this one is presented all in Spanish, correct?
That is correct. That is correct, Brian. This event, we have been doing it, as I said, for 9 years. And the purpose has been to bring in those farmers, those ranchers, those forest stewards that are Latinos and Latinas, although it's open to everyone. And I want to make that point that it's open to everyone. But it's our main focus is to bring those farmers and those Latinos and Latinas, farmers and ranchers and forest stewards to participate and learn more about NRCS, learn about other agencies like Farm Service Agency, Risk Management Agency, and Rural Development, as well as our state agencies like California Department of Food and Agriculture and the Resource Conservation Districts, on all the services that we can provide to Latinos and Latinas, and bringing it in their own language, in Spanish. We'll be translating in English for those that don't speak Spanish, but our main focus is so that these producers feel comfortable in their own language, listening to what the services and the tools that they have available in the state to continue producing sustainable agriculture and protecting their natural resources.
And you'd noted that part of this program is, primarily based around, just providing information to what some of the resources are available. But in the agenda here, I mean, who's included and what types of speakers will people hear from at this?
So we have, I'd be remiss if I don't mention that this conference has been hosted the past 8 years, and the 9 year is no different, by our key partner, the National Center for Appropriate Technology, or NCAT for short. And in working with NCAT, we have assembled a group of farmers and ranchers who will be speaking to on a panel, speaking to other farmers about their operations, their challenges, but also the opportunities in getting conservation on the ground and how they have helped each other in doing that. So that we look forward to have that panel in place that will include farmers and ranchers such as Maria Luis Reyes and Florentino Collazo of La Milpa Organic Farms, and Berta Magana from Los Tres Compadres Farm, as well as we have visited in the past Javier Ledesma of Ledesma Farm. So we are looking forward to have those producers, but others who agency officials and technical experts in different areas like soil health, integrated pest management, how to work on the nutrient budget, and also on finance, in agricultural finances, how to tools to run the finances on a farm, and how to maintain and keep your operation sustainable.
So quite a well-rounded kind of agenda there with some of the farmers themselves, some of the people that can help access some of the resources, both technical and financial there. And now you'd mentioned that the second day is going to consist of a field day. And so what's going to take place there? Where are people going to be going?
So, yes, on the second day, farmers, what we're anticipating farmers to go out on the field and basically visit a farm that will be in Stockton or close by to Stockton. And, we will be convening the conference center, and we'll have two buses that are being chartered to visit two unique field sites, demonstrated successful business and ecological management practices. And these farms are within the Stockton area. And our purpose is to have those producers firsthand look at what has been done successfully in other farms, that they can actually ask questions and interact with those farmers who have worked on those farms and those fields, and exchange ideas and knowledge about how to become more successful, not only protecting their implementing conservation on the ground, but also successfully in the finance and the running of the farming business that they have.
So one day of kind of classroom learning, as it were, of learning about some of these resources, and then one day of kind of looking and seeing firsthand how some of these practices and programs can be put into place there. And now, just lastly, for anyone that's interested in attending, where can people go to either register or learn more about some of these programs that are going to be talked about at the conference?
Yes. So what we have done, and thanks so much for this, they can register the same date of the conference. We definitely welcome people to register on the same day of the conference. No one will be turned down. We are asking for, or NCAT, through NCAT, they are charging a $20 registration. However, this will be based on your resources and the resources of the farmers. So no one will be turned down if they cannot pay for the registration. And again, they can go in and register the day of the conference on November 1st at the Robert Cabral Agricultural Center in Stockton, California. And let me say that address again. It's 2101 East Earhart Avenue, Stockton, California, 95206.
This is the AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet NewsHour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet NewsHour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. There's still time for organic producers to sign up for the Cost Share program. USDA's Organic Certification Cost Share program is accepting applications until November 1st for producers wishing to transition into organic farming. USDA's Rod Bain talks with FSA Acting Deputy Administrator John Berg in this report.
One way the Agriculture Department is broadening support for farmers and ranchers transitioning to organic production, cost share of organic certification.
The organic certification that somebody obtains is gotten through working with one of the certifying agents that are accredited by the USDA National Organic Program, and that there's a cost associated with that. And once those folks are certified, we will reimburse those costs for up to 75% of the certification costs for this program year, up to $750.
Farm Service Agency Acting Deputy Administrator John Burge says the application deadline for the organic certification cost share program is coming up November 1st, with applications to be submitted through local FSA offices.
We're also accepting applications for state departments of agriculture to administer this program. Oftentimes we work with state departments of agriculture as sort of a partner in getting this type of program out.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
FFA members and supporters from across the country will celebrate agriculture and agricultural education later this week during the 96th National FFA Convention and Expo in Indianapolis. More than 65,000 FFA members from the U.S., Puerto Rico, and U.S. Virgin Islands are expected to participate in this year's event November 1st through the 4th. Those attending will participate in general convention sessions hosted at Lucas Oil Stadium, be inspired by their peers as they are recognized for their accomplishments, and hear from keynote speakers. This year's event will also be streamed online. Live broadcasts of each general session will be available, along with finals hall presentations, historical footage, interviews, and information about the FFA member experience. More information on the event is available at convention.ffa.org. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
AllTech survey finds optimism regarding sustainable food systems. Agri-food leaders around the world believe that the industry can work together to create a better, more sustainable food system. That's according to the AllTech Sustainability Insights report. Tara McCarthy, Global Vice President of EST at AllTech, says, quote, "Our goal was to listen to the voices of our industry and its stakeholders and develop a robust, future-facing program of insights that are relevant, ambitious, and genuinely impactful." Some of the findings include 4 out of 5 respondents agreeing that climate change will make food production more difficult, but perspectives differ across the regions. Most respondents agree that regulation is putting pressure on all areas of the supply chain. Dr. Mark Lyons, president and CEO of AllTech, says, quote, "Our industry is navigating extraordinary times, but the opportunities for positive impact are more unprecedented. Imagine the possibilities of working towards shared goals of providing nutrition for all, revitalizing economies, and replenishing our natural resources." NAFB contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvorsen on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.